Hello everyone, Andrea here. Today I thought we could talk about cognitive distortions. Sounds pretty intense. Cognitive distortions. I just woke up, my voice is all like scratchy. So, what is a cognitive distortion? Basically, it's something our mind does that distorts reality to kind of mold to our negative thoughts and negative thinkings to try to reinforce those thoughts. Because when we're in a negative way of thinking, we kind of, a part of us wants to stay there and just kind of spiral and keep going around and around in an unhelpful way. So, that's what I'm doing this morning with my life, so I thought I would read this pamphlet thing to try to get out of that. And I thought maybe you guys would want to hear about it. So, let me just read you this little opening paragraph, and then there's different examples of what cognitive distortions we do. And then I have some cognitive diffusion techniques. So this should be fun. Okay. So, what's a cognitive distortion? And this is written by John M. Grohol. Psychologist or something. This was written in 2009. I don't know exactly where this is. Basically, my therapist gave it to me. Okay. What's a cognitive distortion, and why do so many people have them? Cognitive distortions are simply ways that our mind convinces us of something that isn't really true. These inaccurate thoughts are usually used to reinforce negative thinking or emotions, telling ourselves things that sound rational and accurate, but really only serve to keep us feeling bad at ourselves. I just want to jump in right here, because I think what's really hard for me is how can I really prove to myself that it's not real and it's not really true, because if I'm thinking about maybe I made a mistake or something like that, like how do I know it's me not being rational? Or how, like, that's what's just so hard. What if it is true? What if I am horrible at everything? And then it's just embarrassing that I would not, it's just embarrassing me thinking I'm good at something and then I'm not. Anyway, this is not helpful, me saying this. This is my own brain. When I think about it, I'm like, no, this must not be true. But then I see rationally why it would make sense that I'm distorting my reality, but I don't believe it. Like, I can understand it, but I don't believe it. Okay, not sure if that made sense. Next paragraph. For instance, a person might tell themselves, I always fail when I try to do something new. I therefore fail at everything I try. This is an example of black or white, or polarized thinking. The person is only seeing things in absolutes, that if they fail at one thing, they must fail at all things. If they added, I must be a complete loser and failure for their thinking, that would also be an example of overgeneralization, taking a failure at one specific task and generalizing it in their very self and identity. Yeah, I think we'd do that. We're very big on labels in our society, and so if we think one thing, and I don't know where I read this, but I think it was in a book about procrastination. I don't remember what it's called, but it was actually a pretty good book. I actually didn't finish it, which is very funny, because it's a book on procrastination. But there was a line in there saying, like, instead of saying, oh, I'm never someone who does my dishes right after my meal, you can say, oh, I used to be someone that never did dishes after my meal. Or sometimes I'm someone who doesn't do that. But it's not like who you are as a person. Sometimes you do it, sometimes you don't. It's not like you have this genetic deformity that's making you do it, not do your dishes right after your meal. It's this label that you've given yourself, and then it's kind of this like self-fulfilling prophecy that, yeah, oh, I'm just not someone who does it. So I'm not going to start trying to push myself because, oh, it's just not something I do. And then we hold ourselves back. Okay, next paragraph. Cognitive distortions are at the core of what many cognitive behavioral and other kinds of therapists try and help a person to learn to change in psychotherapy. By learning to correctly identify this kind of stinking thinking, a person can then answer the negative thinking back and refute it. By refuting the negative thinking over and over again, it will slowly diminish over time and be automatically replaced by more rational, balanced thinking. I think this is most likely true, but I think it will take years because there's been things that I've been working on for like 2 years, and still my initial knee-jerk reaction is like always negative. And I can kind of rationalize sometimes if I'm feeling like if I'm strong mentally that day. It's really hard, but I think this is kind of an investment in yourself that once you realize it, you realize that it can change for the better. Even though it's really, really hard, I feel like it's like running 20 million marathons daily in your mind trying to figure all this out. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about different cognitive distortions that our mind does. And then after that, we're going to talk about some tools and how to kind of work through them. So Aaron Beck first proposed the theory behind cognitive distortions, and David Burns was responsible for popularizing it with common names and examples for distortions. Interesting. I don't know who those two people are. I've never looked them up, but maybe that would be interesting. It's interesting. They probably have books or something. Filtering. What is filtering? So we take the negative details and magnify them, while filtering out all the positive aspects of a situation. For instance, a person may pick out a single unpleasant detail and dwell on it exclusively so that their vision of reality becomes darkened or distorted. Oh yeah, I get that for sure. We all do that. We might do like amazing on a test, for example, and then the one question we get wrong, we're like, well, we are a failure. I often get like, well, I'm a fraud. I didn't actually deserve to get that good mark. Something's wrong. Like, see, I don't actually understand everything because I got that one question wrong. I think that might be an example. Polarized thinking. Things are either black or white. We have to be perfect or we're a failure. There is no middle ground. You place people or situations in either or categories with no shades of gray, or allowing for the complexity of most people and situations. If your performance falls short or perfect, you see yourself as a total failure. Yep. Kind of goes with the other one a bit. Overgeneralization. We come to general conclusions based on a single incident or piece of evidence. If something bad happens once, we expect it to happen over and over again. A person may see a single unpleasant event as a never-ending pattern of defeat. Okay, but this is so hard because, like, part of self-preservation is trying to learn from our mistakes. So it's hard not to look at another situation and be like, oh, this is going to go well, even though it went bad last time. It's like a protective mechanism. We don't want to do it again, but I guess sometimes there's no reason why something would go wrong again. But if in our minds it will go wrong again, then it more likely will. Because when we think we're going to fail at something, we have a bigger chance to fail. Jumping to conclusions. Without individuals saying so, we know what they are feeling and why they act the way they do. In particular, we are able to determine how people are feeling towards us. For example, a person may conclude that someone is reacting negatively towards them and don't bother to find out if they are correct. Another example is a person may anticipate that things will turn out badly and will feel convinced that their predictions is already an established fact. Yes, we all do this. This is what I've been talking about in other episodes about assuming. Just assume we know how someone's going to react. We assume that someone's mad at us when we don't actually know. We don't actually ask. And if we do ask, we ask with already an idea in our heads of what the answer is. Catastrophizing. We expect disaster to strike, no matter what. This is also referred to magnifying or minimizing. We hear about a problem and use what-if questions. Example, what if tragedy strikes? What if it happens to me? For example, a person might exaggerate the importance of an insignificant event, such as their mistake or someone else's achievement. Or they may inappropriately shrink the magnitude of a significant event until they appear tiny. For example, a person's own desirable qualities or someone else's imperfections. Yeah, I could see this. Okay, next. Personalization. Thinking that everything people do or say is some kind of reaction to us. We also compare ourselves to others, trying to determine who is smarter, better looking, etc. A person sees themselves as the cause of some unhealthy external event A person sees themselves as the cause of some unhealthy external event that they were not responsible for. For example, we were late to the dinner party and caused the hostess to overcook the meal. If I had only pushed my husband to leave on time, this wouldn't have happened. Oh my gosh. I myself have done this. I've seen so many people do this. Thinking our mistake, since we did something wrong, caused someone else to do another mistake, but it's our fault because we made the first mistake, la la la. People can do their own things and make their own choices. It's really not our fault. But the thing that's hard about this is because the other person, let's say the hostess has a distortion, and then she's like, oh, it is their fault that I burnt this meal because they're responsible, when really she's responsible, but she's having, anyway. Ugh. It's just because all of us have these distortions, I think. So we're all just communicating through distortions, and it's a complete mess, and, you know. It's kind of funny when you think about it. We're all crazy. Oh, how did this happen to us? Okay. Control fallacies. If we feel externally controlled, we see ourselves as helpless victims of fate. For example, I can't help it if the quality of the work is poor. My boss demanded I work overtime on it. The fallacy of internal control has us assuming responsibility for the pain and happiness of everyone else around us. For example, why aren't you happy? Is it because of something I did? Oh my god, this is a big one. This is a big one. At least for me. Because this is an example of not doing self-care. For thinking I had to hand in this horrible paper because I didn't have enough time. I mean, that's not a good example because it's kind of hard with school. But let's say I was forced to work overtime so I couldn't make a proper dinner for myself the next day. Or I couldn't eat well that day. I couldn't do what I needed to do for myself. And it's all my boss's fault. Well, you know what? We can stand our ground when someone is asking us of something. We have the power to say no. And if your boss is not letting you say no, overtime, there's something that needs to be done there. It's so easy to think that we don't have a voice in that situation. But we do. And if someone's asking us to do something, which is really sacrificing our basic needs, like eating well, or having time to do your laundry or sleep, no one should be asking you that. That is not okay. And then the second part of it, like, why aren't you happy? Is it something I did? Ugh, it's an exhausting thing to do, thinking that what you're doing is affecting how someone else is feeling. And the thing is, they are the ones that affect what they're feeling. And it's really not up to us. It's their job. And it's they're in control of their feelings. It's not because of us. Okay. Fallacy of fairness. We feel resentful because we think we know what is fair, but other people won't agree with us. As our parents tell us, life is always fair. Maybe they mean life isn't always fair. Okay. And people who go through life applying a measuring ruler against every situation, judging its fairness, will often feel badly and negative because of it. This is true. Blaming. We hold other people responsible for our pain, or take the other track and blame ourselves for every problem. For example, stop making me feel bad about myself. Nobody can make us feel a particular way. Only we have control over our own emotions and emotional reactions. That's true. That's what we were saying about them in the other point there. Shoulds. We have a list of ironclad rules about how others and we should behave. People who break the rules make us angry, and we feel guilty when we violate these rules. A person may often believe they are trying to motivate themselves with shoulds and shouldn'ts, as if they have to be punished before they can do anything. For example, I really should exercise. I shouldn't be so lazy. Musts and oughts are also offenders. The emotional consequence is guilt. When a person directs should statements towards others, they often feel anger, frustration, and resentment. Yes. I think this is a very, very significant point. And I don't know how to motivate ourselves without saying should and shouldn't, because I'm such a big culprit of feeling guilty for everything, and I really like making, like, to-do lists, but sometimes the to-do list doesn't help, and it just makes me feel bad about myself if I don't get it done. But I think the thing is realizing that just because it's written down and you want to get it done, maybe not set an unrealistic time frame on things, and especially if you're in the process of kind of dealing with your mental health, it's not just a normal, you're not having your good energy levels, and you're not able to focus as well. And if you then also use, if you combine that with other distortions and comparing it with other people, and you're just not going to get things done, and you're going to feel like crap about it. And I hate the word lazy. I don't think we should use it, because I think most of us are not actually lazy. Most of us are just exhausted or have things going on. But it's not, I don't think people are just lazy. I think people are just going through a lot. We're all in survival mode. Okay. Emotional reasoning. We believe that what we feel must be true automatically. If we feel stupid and boring, then we must be stupid and boring. You assume that your unhealthy emotions reflect the way things really are. I feel it, therefore it must be true. Yeah. Fallacy of change. We expect that other people will change to suit us if we pressure or cajole? C-A-J-O-L-E. I don't know what that word is. But anyway, them enough. We need to change people because our hopes for happiness seem to depend entirely on them. Yes, depending on other people to make us happy is a common theme. And I think we've probably talked about this before in another episode. Yeah. Okay, and next is global labeling. We generalize one or two qualities into a negative global judgment. These are extreme forms of generalization and are also referred to as labeling and mislabeling. Instead of describing an error in context of a specific situation, a person will attach an unhealthy label to themselves. For example, they may say, "I'm a loser," in a situation when they failed at a specific task. When someone else's behavior rubs a person the wrong way, they may attach an unhealthy label to him, such as, "He's a real jerk." Mislabeling involves describing an event with language that is highly colored and emotionally loaded. For example, instead of saying someone drops her child off at daycare every day, a person who is mislabeling might say that she abandons her children to strangers. This is very common in our society, especially with dating, like the whole, like, "He's a jerk," "Oh, she's a bitch," la 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 la. I don't think we should be labeling people like that, because I think, especially as we've talked about before, a person isn't defined by just one action that they do. It might not be who they really are. So, and that's more so true for yourself, as we're talking about. All of these kind of distortions are very related. Okay, there's two left. We are continually on trial. Oh, sorry. The title of this one is Always Being Right. We are continually on trial to prove that our opinions and actions are correct. Being wrong is unthinkable, and we will go to any length to demonstrate our rightness. For example, "I don't care how badly arguing will make me feel. I'm going to win this argument no matter what, because I'm right." Being right often is more important than the feelings of the others around us who engages in the cognitive distortion, even loved ones. That's interesting. Heaven's reward fallacy. This is the last one. We expect our sacrifice and self-denial to pay off, as if someone is keeping score. We feel bitter when reward doesn't come. So now that you know what cognitive distortions are, how do you feel about undoing them? Read how in Fixing Cognitive Distortions. I don't think I have that paper. If you're interested, the references of everything I just read, sorry. So, Beck, A.T., from 1976, Cognitive Therapies and Emotional Disorders, New York, American Library. And Burns, D.D., 1980, Feeling Good, The New Mood Therapy, New York, New American Library. Cool. Alright, so I'm going to read you a few kind of tools. Okay, these are kind of fun. So, a sampling of cognitive diffusion techniques. The mind. Treat the mind as an external event, almost as a separate person. Example, well, there goes my mind again, or my mind is worrying again. I like that, separating kind of your mind and yourself. Mental appreciation. Thank your mind when you notice it butting in with worries and opinions. Show aesthetic appreciation for its products. Example, "You are doing great job. You are doing a great job worrying today. Thanks for the input." This is not sarcasm. After all, the word machine is doing exactly what it was designed to do. All of those thousands of years ago, problem solve and avoid danger. Commitment to openness. If you notice you start to fight with your insides when negative context shows up, ask yourself if such negativity is acceptable and try to get to yes. Just noticing. Use the language of observation, example, noticing, when talking about private experiences. For example, "So I'm just noticing that I'm judging myself right now." Okay, I think that means, like, I guess it's just being self-aware of what you're doing. Okay, buying thoughts. use active language to distinguish between thoughts that just occur and the thoughts that are believed. Example, I guess I'm buying the thought that I'm bad. Pop-up mind. Imagine that your negative chatter is like internet pop-up ads. I like that one, because that one's a cool vision, and then you can just kind of like click the X, like, goodbye. Goodbye. Cell phone from hell. Imagine that your negative chatter is like a cell phone you can't turn off. Example, hello, this is your mind speaking. Do you realize that you need to worry? That one's good too, I like that one. Experimental seeking. Openly seek out more material, especially if it is difficult. If your mind tells you not to do something that is scary but worthwhile, thank your mind for the great hint and do the difficult things with gusto. Gusto. Put it out there. Write down a negative evaluation you are ready to diffuse from. Example, mean, stupid, angry, unlovable. And put it on a name tag and wear it. Don't explain it to anyone for a while. Just feel how it feels to have it out there. Okay, that's a bit much, I think. Like, actually put it on a name tag? I don't know about that. That seems a bit much. Okay. Mind t-shirt. Imagine that your negative evaluations you are ready to diffuse from are written in bold letters on your t-shirt. I can't speak today. If you feel especially bold, actually do that. Think the opposite. If your mind is stopping action, practice deliberately engaging in a behavior while trying to command its opposite. For example, get up and walk around while saying, I can't move while I'm reading this sentence. Okay, there's like a lot more of these. Some of them I don't really like, actually. Some of them are okay. I'm trying to find one if, okay, let me create a new story. If you find yourself entangled in a logical but sad story about your life and why things have to be the way they are, write down the normal story, then take all the descriptive facts and write the same exact facts into a different story. Repeat until you feel more open to new possibilities with your history. That would take a lot of work. Okay, well, this is a few of them, but I think kind of just identifying just the distortions from before, just knowing that they are distortions, it makes it interesting, and that makes it easier to kind of deal with them, I think. But what I find, sorry, I'm yawning. Sorry. What I find interesting is that when I see these as distortions, and like me just thinking about my whole life, I just see all of these distortions all around me. And that's what we were brought up on, especially in TV shows. Oh my gosh, TV shows. And we see it in our everywhere. Everything that's supposed to kind of create structure around us seems to have these distortions in them. So no wonder we have them ourselves. But I guess if we have the knowledge that they are in fact distortions, it does kind of make it easier though. I say to myself, oh, I can't reason with myself, but maybe that's a distortion. Sorry, I just realized that. Oh my goodness, that's funny. I love having these little aha moments when I'm talking about something and I realize I'm doing the thing while I'm talking about it. It's just crazy how our minds work. It's just you when that happens, you just kind of have to smile and realize that it's not us, like it's not you as a person that is thinking this way. Like it's our mind and who we are kind of separate. It doesn't define us. I get these moments where that makes sense. And hopefully more of these moments will come. Like, I just had an aha moment right now. Which was nice. So, hopefully this was interesting and not just me reading off something in a boring way. Because I found it interesting. And it might be good to look. I haven't Googled any of these or actually researched much about it other than what I talked about with my therapist. And she gave me these printouts, which was nice. But it's a good thing to think about. And if you're experiencing any of this, I guess you can feel less alone, first off. And don't be mad at yourself that you're experiencing these, because I mean, we're surrounded by it. How can we feel bad about our mind doing that? Like, we were trained to think these ways. I just also had this other random fact that I just thought about. I don't know why, but I was just thinking about how in high school they wouldn't let you go to the bathroom sometimes. Like, when you would raise your hand and you'd be like, I need to go to the bathroom. And they wouldn't let you. I think that's a horrible thing to do to someone. Because, I mean, you're telling the person that their self-need to go to the bathroom is not important. Very mad at that right now. Because I find myself at work sometimes not going to the bathroom because I feel like I'm not allowed. But, like, come on, I shouldn't be allowed to go to the bathroom. Why do I think I'm not allowed? I'm like, I should be doing my job. I shouldn't have to go to the bathroom. But it's just a basic need. Like, we have to take care of our basic needs. And I just kind of connected that back to, like, not being allowed to do your basic needs when you were kind of at a time when you were learning how to take care of yourself. Anyway, I don't know if that's still a thing. Maybe not. But I just thought that was interesting. Okay, I'm gonna go now. Have a good day. Hopefully you enjoyed this. And see you next time. Bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.